The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Clint Nation's Comic Book Chronicles!
Yay!
I'm your host, D-I-R-T. Our normal host, Kim Dog, got himself married this week, so he's off celebrating and getting drunk and eating lots of red meat, apparently, from the pictures he's sending us.
Good job, Tim.
So we wish him the best of whatevers, but in his stead tonight, I am hosting because, you know, nobody else really wanted to do it, so. And I'm being joined today by the man behind the sound effects, Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
Also joined tonight by the man behind @NewsNerdsNeed on Twitter. It is Roddy Cat.
What's going on, everybody?
It's a Java.
You snuck into my room last night. What is that? You may have heard there's a little thing going on called San Diego Comic-Con. We'll probably talk about some of that stuff later. But first on the show, because we swapped things around and it seems to be working pretty well, we're going to start with our comic book reviews for this week. And I first want to ask, does anybody have something that they just got to get off their chest, a book they want to cover first, they just got to scream and shout and rant about? Anybody got anything this week?
Really? Fellas? Anybody? Oh, no. Our show's been hijacked. Anyway, all right. So let me pull up the list of comics this week. I mean, it was kind of a, you know, we were just talking off the air just before going on about how this week was kind of, I don't want to say lackluster, but it was kind of tough sledding in terms of finding an outstanding book.
Yeah, there were a lot of good, decent books that came out that were entertaining enough, but it's going to be kind of hard picking like a cream of the crop type thing. Maybe as we talk about stuff tonight, something will coalesce as, you know, that great book that came out this week. But really, I'm having a tough time nailing something down.
I think I've got a pick, but yeah, like we were saying, it was on the tough side. You know, I kind of got to my pick late in my round of reading. So, but how about we talk about some of the DC stuff that came out this week? The first book I ended up picking up this week actually was Batman #3.
Okay.
I was actually able to pick up the Tim Sale variant cover, holding that up for the viewers at home. And what we get in this issue of the newly rebirthed Batman at DC, thank you, Dirt, for putting that up.
Yeah.
What we get in this issue is a basic origin story for Gotham and Gotham Girl, and it's a pretty interesting but very familiar take on a superhero origin story. Tom King takes from the echoes of Batman's origin and some of the newer origin stories and kind of weaves them together to come up with the origin for these two brand new heroes who are on the scene in Gotham, and Batman is basically using them as, I don't want to say apprentices or even like
sidekicks?
No, I was about to say they're not technically sidekicks because he's showing up after they've already gotten there and he's not necessarily coordinating things with them the way he would with a sidekick. But, you know, like I said, I think apprentice is probably the best way to do it because he's still sort of showing them the ropes at the same time.
Yeah, he's still mentoring them.
Right. That's mentor is probably the best way to put it.
So a mentor and an apprentice, right? Isn't
that how it works? Yeah, mentor on one side, apprentice on the other. So that, you know, that is the bulk of the storytelling that is within this book. We find out, though, that at the end of the book, the cliffhanger ending, and I'll ring the spoiler bell without spoiling too much, the cliffhanger ending involves these brand new rookie Greenhorn heroes kind of getting in over their heads. So that's how this book ends. Overall, though, I mean, we do find out a lot more about these new heroes that we've never seen before. We also find out that Batman has basically found out a lot of their origin story by resurrecting a long time alias that he's used.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, Jared, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
I was just flipping and I was looking through this physical copy, and this is my first time seeing the awful Snickers ad.
Oh, it's not that bad.
Anyway, go on. Like I said, sorry to interrupt.
No, I was just going to say, I enjoyed it. Like, I didn't really have an issue with anything in there. I thought, you know, when it first started and we saw the origin of Gotham and Gotham Girl happening, I thought we were getting a retelling of Batman's origin. Like, they were updating it for, you know, the new rebirth era. And I was a little like, all right, yeah. But then, you know, once we saw that that was their origin, you know, in a way it would kind of make sense that with all the violence and crime and corruption that's in Gotham City, you know, Bruce Wayne would not be the only one affected by tragedy like this.
Right.
So once I saw how it was playing out, I actually enjoyed it. You know, I allowed myself to enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm.
The artwork, I thought, was, again, beautiful in the book.
It's Finch.
Yeah, I mean, it may run late sometimes, but yeah. It is beautiful looking artwork. But at the same time, you know, it was good, it was solid, but again, it didn't really stand out as being all that great. It was interesting. We got a little more information, but we still don't really have like a lot of information. We really don't have like a good plot at this point pushing it forward.
Right.
Still a lot of just meandering around and mm-hmm. showing stuff happening in Gotham, but I don't really feel like we're at a point yet where we can say like this is the theme of the arc and this is, you know, the villain we're facing. This is the big, you know, build up that we're going towards. Right now it's just kind of a lot of stuff happens and people are reacting and it's interesting, but
right.
It just doesn't feel like it's pushing anywhere.
I think one of the seeds that King is planting in this is the is how Gotham and Gotham Girl obtain their powers.
Yeah.
So I think that is a seed that's been planted that's going to be expanded upon in the near future.
Well, and I'm also wondering with the way in which it was done, which was, you know, really only alluded to. We didn't actually see it, or, you know, we don't know who's behind it or anything like that, but the way in which it was described that led up to them getting their powers makes me wonder if someone or some organization that in fact powered them isn't going to show up later demanding a favor in return or something, you know, or, you know, they're going to have something, you know, some mental like RoboCop directive programmed in there that they don't know about that's going to come back to bite them later. So I'm just wondering if that's kind of left unexplored and unexplained, so they have room to play with that later on.
Right.
But still, like I said, beautiful artwork. It was a good story.
Yeah, good. Not awesome. Like, you know, knock your socks off awesome. But it was good. It's the latest chapter in the story. So hopefully, when it's put together, it'll read pretty well.
Yeah. All right. What else you got?
Let's see. How about there's a couple of DC books that came out that were number ones. I did not read very many of them, but I did read, and I know you have thoughts on this, Justice League number one.
Okay. Well, go ahead first with
my thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay. It was blah.
Okay.
There's some in-depth analysis Alrighty for you then. There.
And Roddy, you read this too, right?
I just skimmed it, so I didn't actually read it.
Well, okay, here was my problem with this Justice League number one. If you read Rebirth, then you basically got the same information that is in this book. This book was once again a lot of, hey, there's something going on, Green Lanterns have to reply to it. Let's have the Green Lanterns talk to each other a little bit about their powers and the relationship with one another. And then we'll go to Cyborg, and Cyborg's going to talk about what he thinks about some of the other Justice Leaguers as he's trying to solve this problem. And then we see the Flash. We see how the Flash's powers work and how he's different from some of the other heroes. And like, it just felt like we're getting more introductions to the characters, which we got in Rebirth. And with it being Justice League, like, mm-hmm. you should pretty much know. Like, if there's Batman there, you should be familiar with Batman. Superman's there, you should be familiar with Superman. I mean, yes, there are some weird things going on in their own individual books, but the whole point of a book like Justice League is, hey, Aquaman works in the ocean. You know, Wonder Woman, Goddess of War, got it. You know,
mm-hmm.
let's move on. Let's get there. And we have kind of a sprinkling of the beginning of something. We have these earthquakes going on around the world and stuff happening with, you know, people's powers and whatever. So we know that there's something going on. These little creatures appear in Gotham. So we get the beginning of something, but it just felt like, you know, they just spent 80% of the book dealing with, here's character X, this is what their powers are, here's how they relate to some of the other people on the team. Now we go to the next character, we do the same thing.
So it basically sounds like they just rehashed Rebirth, just in case anybody, just in case people didn't read that one or something?
Yeah, like, they just, it's the number one, so we've got to you know, get in on the ground floor and bring everybody up to speed.
Right, reintroduce,
but,
yeah.
But sure. They just did that in the Rebirth special, so you don't need right. to do it here, you know? So, I don't know if maybe they think that all the Rebirth specials are going to be collected into one volume and, you know, separate from these books that are coming out in the main series. But it just felt like, you know, been here, done that, let's move on. And instead we're just stuck, you know, treading some of the same over and over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the artwork was nice.
I actually got, I actually had a Wildstorm / Image flashback in this without spoiling too much. Because wasn't there a book or a villain in Wildstorm in the early Image days called the Kindred? And is that what they're trying to weave into this?
Is that the alien?
No, yeah, those are somebody else. Like I said, I don't remember it very well because I just remember the name, and I think I was falling out of Image pretty quickly at that point, so I don't, you know, I don't remember too much of it. But yeah. I was wondering if maybe you guys had better recall.
Doesn't sound familiar to me.
All right.
I
don't want to spoil too much. I just know.
I want to say that character from the Wildstorm universe appeared in like Action Comics in the early days of the New 52.
The Kindred?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
But again, I'm not, you know, Wildstorm I never really got into other than like Deathblow, so
right.
Couldn't tell you. And it's not on Comixology Unlimited, so there's no way of catching up to it there.
Exactly. All right. I mean, my very unsophisticated review was just kind of like, you know, I was left nonplussed. It was very kind of been there, done that. Yeah, there was a nice little tease that the big bad in this opening arc has a way to neutralize the Justice League a certain way. And, you know, that was, you know, okay, but it felt like we were, you know, in the midst of what I felt should have been maybe a double-sized first issue, you know? I felt like maybe we were getting a little shortchanged on the first issue.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm a fan of Justice League in general, so we'll see how it works out. But one of the things that made the last series so great was the last couple arcs we got were big, huge, epic
right.
stories, you know, spanning universes and worlds and everything. And, you know, now we're just going back to the Saturday morning cartoon. There's earthquakes everywhere. Go save the people. You know?
Right. Someone's behind all this. We have to find out who.
Come on, Robin. Let's go check the back computer. All right. Well,
any other DC stuff? Like, I heard something big bad happened in Superman 3.
Let's see if I can find it. What did I do with that one?
Did you read it?
Oh, yeah, I read it.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? Psh. Yeah, I read it. Okay, so this is the...
This is where that character came
yeah,
back.
Yeah, the one I got really confused about last week, the Eradicator. So basically, he is... A being created on Krypton. You're not really sure, you know, is he mechanical? Is he, you know, biomechanical? Is he a synthoid? Whatever.
Right, that's not fully established in this.
Right, but he was created by Zod to protect Krypton. And that was always Zod's, you know, misunderstood, you know, he was always there to protect Krypton, even though he would take it to the extreme and he would, you know, cause genocide of another race if it meant protecting Krypton, you know. So he was tasked to help preserve Krypton. Krypton exploded. They saw the rocket taking Kal-El out of there, so it took them several years now to track it down. But now that he has, he wants to get the Kryptonian DNA from the last, you know, Kryptonian.
The last son, yeah.
And then finds out that he has had a son, but the son is, you know, mixed human and Kryptonian. Yeah. So he wants to get their DNA, preserve it, rebuild their race, whatever. But he sees Jonathan as tainted because he's half human. So he wants to basically destroy the human half in order to preserve the pure Kryptonian half. And that leads into the confrontation and some of the things that happen in this book that I don't want to spoil.
Yeah.
It is possible, though, that a long-time side character,
mm-hmm.
I guess is a way to put it, of the DC yeah. universe may have, this may have been their last appearance in this current DC universe.
That's a good way of putting it because it's not necessarily the last time we'll see this character.
It might be. Or at least this version of them, but the way DC
right.
is, there's a multiverse somewhere where they still exist, but... But anyway, you know, again, this is another book I enjoyed. It was solid. It just, you know, it's the ongoing epic of what's going on with Superman and his family. But the way that they've been doing these books, you know, this is issue 3, so you can't really say, you know, they have this long track record, but the way they've been doing the books is that it seems like not a lot happens until you get towards the end of the book and then it ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
That seems to be the style that they're going with these, which is good to you know, get you to want the next issue that's coming 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're just kind of left sometimes with like, well, you know, it was entertaining. I got some story, but now I'm more interested in what happens next than necessarily feeling like, oh, what I just read was so great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, it was good. I enjoyed it. It's still worth the $2.99, but not going to be click of the week, though.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All righty. I'm glad to hear that you are still enjoying this. I was, you know, I read through this. I saw that kind of climactic scene in this issue. And, you know, I don't think this is the last we'll see of this particular character. Just based upon, you know, the mechanism by which this character, you know, kind of went
goes
the way
away.
Exactly went the way it did. That's pretty much it. That's a great way to put it as well. It kind of goes away. So I don't think it's the last we'll see of this, even of this particular iteration of the character. So, but otherwise, I guess it was still kind of interesting to see the family dynamic being developed. You know, as we see it play out, you know, it's not it's kind of a foreign concept for a lot of us, this whole superheroing with a child at home. So, you know, it's being touched upon in a lot of different books now. So
the one thing that I did appreciate though about this story is the way that Jonathan is not just a retelling of Clark Kent's origin. Like, there, it's not just hey, you don't fit in. Hey, you got powers. Hey, now you have to figure it out. Like, it's completely different due to the fact that his father is Superman. Because A, it puts him in peril. B, he has, you know, someone to look up to or learn from. But then C, you're going to have all these issues of the, you know, son always has to go his own way and, you know, turn against, you know, whatever. So they have a lot of dynamics they can play with, and they've played with some of them already with the way they're doing it. So it's not, you know, exactly the same as what happened with Clark, and I appreciate that they're, you know, playing with that and you know, toying with it a little bit.
Right, because it's one thing to, you know, to have Jonathan and Martha Kent, you know, either, depending on which version you're dealing with, you know, teaching him and kind of sheltering him as opposed to, you know, an active, you know, on-duty all-the-time Superman.
Mm.
So, that you know, that like you said, that's a, you know, it's an interesting dynamic that they're exploring. But as I said, just before we move on, it's interesting that there are now more than one titles out there. There's multiple titles out there that are exploring this whole superheroing while there is a family and child at home.
Well, that's what happens when the readers grow up.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Yeah, I was just about to say that, and I did not necessarily want to throw ourselves into that mix, but okay. All right.
Did anybody read the Hellblazer?
Nay.
I meant to, but no, I did not.
I did, unfortunately.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I did not care for it. I'm probably, like, this is probably my one and done with this book. Like, I knew, you know, I mean, John Constantine is not a likable character. I mean, that's mm-hmm. kind of the point of him. But the book itself, it was, first of all, a lot of the dialogue is written in accents, which very deeply in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're reading it, and it's like a heavy Cockney accent of someone he's talking to. So there's a lot of, you know, skipped syllables and letters missing in words that they put in there because you're supposed to, you know, read it the way someone says it. Right. But it makes it so it takes like 3 times as long to read through the page. And it got to the point where I'm sitting there reading this going, this is like, it's taking me too long to figure out what the person's saying, mm-hmm. much less follow the story that's happening here. And then the story that we got was the blandest, most simple Hellblazer John Constantine story you can think of. There's a demon, and the demon wants to steal his soul, and so he's got to figure out a way to trick the guy. But mm-hmm. the guy knows to watch out for these tricks that's going to happen. And so at the last moment, a friend of John Constantine's who doesn't really like him but owes him a favor shows up and gives him some information, and then he's able to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the most encapsulated, like that was a 6-issue arc in the mid-80s that was groundbreaking for the character, right. And they just whittled it down to one 20-page story, you know, as an introduction for the character. And it was just like, ugh. Like, I don't know, it was so bland and so generic and And like I said, reading it was just way more difficult than it should have been. Maybe if you're British, you know, and that the slang and everything comes more naturally to you, it might be a little easier to read. But for me, I just, like, I got done with it, and I was like, I now feel less having read this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell that to Kanja Club.
I would, but I have no idea what they just said.
That's funny.
I did read I did read through the Batgirl and Birds of Prey, mm-hmm. And it was fine.
I skimmed it.
Yeah, again, it was a lot of introduction to the characters. It was a lot of setup. It was a lot of, hey, did you know Black Canary's in a band?
Right.
Did you know they
brought that in? Okay.
Yeah. Did you know that Huntress's family has mob ties and right. you know
and kind of reintroduced the whole whatchamacallit, the spiral stuff too. So if you hadn't been reading Nightwing,
right? So
or Grayson.
Grayson. Yeah.
So I think, you know, again, overall it was fine. I mean, there was nothing... I didn't read it and then feel bad having read it. I'll read the first issue of the ongoing and see if it catches my attention. But again, this was another just, you know, bland character introduction, just letting you know a little bit of what these characters have gone through the past few years and the various DC books and...
Right, they do touch upon the Killing Joke stuff, too.
Yeah, it is mentioned. It's in canon now. Mm-hmm. So they brought it back for sure. Yeah, so considering that at the end of the Batgirl series, they tried to retcon it out of continuity
right.
and say that it was a false memory, this one basically says, nope, it's happened.
Yep.
We're going on from there.
Pretty much. So any other DC books? There are a number of kind of third issues this week for some of the main ongoings like Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Aquaman.
No, I didn't read any. I'll probably read the Aquaman this weekend. Mm-hmm. I just haven't had a chance to get to it, but the other two books haven't done anything for me.
Gotcha. Alrighty.
All right, so are we ready for Marvel?
I think so.
All right, Roddy, you've been quiet, so you get to start.
Hey, I've heard that's been the request.
Oh no!
Just kidding.
Are you becoming enamored with the soundboard? Is that what it is? You just want to play sound effects?
Actually, no. I was just looking through Twitter, looking at Comic Con stuff, but. Yeah. And actually I was thinking of, let's go with Astonishing Ant-Man number 10.
By my reaction, you're kind of getting a hint at what my click of the week might be this week.
Thinking, which I can see that pick. So here we have, after the events of last issue, Scott gets caught by the Crosses, and Cassie escapes and tries to go back to get the crew to come help her get him out, which half of the crew being who they are kind of dips out, mm-hmm. going for themselves after taking a whole bunch of useless or somewhat junk. Useless things.
Yeah.
So the crew, you know, who sticks around with Cassie goes back in there, that being Darla, you know, Smith, Grizzly, I think that was it, and Raz from Giant Man.
Right.
So they go back in, and Cassie gets to get her dad. They have a fight with the Crosses, which ends up them escaping, but Scott still's trying to be protective and all, hey, you know, follow my lead, and Cassie's just kind of taking charge of everything, and was like, nope, I got this.
Exactly. Yeah. I used to be a young Avenger, but there's...
Right, everyone's trained by Cap. So.
Exactly. There's a few very, very... funny scenes in this, and that's really what stood out to me, is that they're just very well set up. You know, Ramon Rosanas's art on this is consistently excellent. The script is always, you know, setting up the next story, you know, story point and next joke pretty much all at the same time. You know, Nick Spencer deserves a lot of credit for writing a very funny but still very, you know, very superheroic story. Definitely the half of the crew that steps away, dips out, is the expected part, the expected group members, except for one who makes a cameo appearance later on in the story with a pretty strong effect upon the story.
Yes, indeed. And we also, if you've been paying attention to what's been going on in the story, we finally figure out how Scott gets to jail.
Exactly, because that's how we start this particular arc.
Right.
So it's pretty satisfying to get to this point, because now we see where we are, and we also see how one of the other one of the former love interests plays a role in in how he gets exactly in how he gets basically hung out to dry.
I have to admit, I didn't like. I wasn't really thinking too hard about how that would have happened because I figured I eventually was going to get it, but I wasn't really expecting it to happen that way.
Right. It was a nice twist.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice twist, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading this book. I like the fact that you brought up that how he is eventually caught and eventually what provides the evidence for him to be put away for supposed or alleged crimes, it, you know, results directly from something, you know, a plot point that had been explored on upon earlier in the series.
Right, it got brought up, but then just kind of pushed to the side.
Exactly, it was a side point.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, but you know, Ant-Man is usually pretty has been a pretty good read. This is no exception. So
absolutely,
where it goes from here, we shall see.
Absolutely. All right. Did any
what
that just
happened
me?
There? No. I heard that
okay,
too.
All right.
you just remixed yourself before you went silent.
Nope. You're,
now we
you're
can't
silent.
Hear you at all.
You're completely silent, Agent 70.
Yeah, we can't hear you at all, and neither one of us can read lips either. So
no. So he's saying hello. I need to find flowers. I'm looking for something.
Boy, I wish I had read that Zombie Tramp book. I think that's what he just said.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what he just said.
Yeah.
Still can't hear you. Nothing? No.
Hold on. Wait, say something. Say something.
Wait.
Test one, test two.
There you go.
Hey, I'm back. I think it was something that was plugged into one of the USB ports that I took back out. But ultimately, we were talking about... What was I? I'm trying to think back to what I was talking about. Oh, Black Widow number 5.
There we go. Okay. Oh, yeah. Actually, this was actually another... This is probably another potential flick of the week.
I kind of like that this story... That this issue didn't have a happy ending.
Right.
You know, that this is obviously another chapter in this opening arc, but I don't know if this opening arc is done yet. Is it maybe a 6-issue arc? Because I think there is a tease of ramifications or some sort of possible conclusion in the next one, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
That seems to be the case, you know, or at the very least furthering it along.
Right.
You figured the arc would have been some sort of resolution, and while we have a little bit here, it's not enough to kind of push you to something different.
Sure, sure. So, you know, what we have is a setup that Black Widow is onto from the get-go, and she's delivering some documents that she's been blackmailed into obtaining. And the blackmailer had set conditions upon, you know, the whether or not Widow was successful. And what we find out is once, you know, what's cool is that this is, you know, one little piece of the puzzle of this first opening arc, but it's a pretty effective spy story. It definitely resembles an action sequence out of a Bourne movie. Mm-hmm. And I find, you know, and I give Wade and who's the artist on this?
Oh, so not Stanley.
Is it Sam? I think it's Sam.
Wait, Stanley is co-writing also, but I think he is part of the art also.
Right. I give Samney a lot of credit for composing pages that really keep the suspense going and keep the action moving as well.
Right, because he hadn't, I remember seeing something on Twitter, probably in the last issue, where it was like people were giving him his props for his contributions to the story, and it is definitely deserved, because, you know, the page layouts and everything, it's pretty action-packed.
Definitely.
You know, so, which actually reminds me on a side note that I totally forgot to read Velvet this week, but I will have to do that later.
Definitely. I liked it. I didn't think it was a real contender for Click of the Week.
Well, I mean, given some of the other stuff that I'm still looking through, you know, it's a potential. I'm not saying it's a strong one, but it's a pretty decent one.
Gotcha.
Because it's got plenty of action. We see some. It's not necessarily a turnabout, but we see some. It goes bad, but it still ends up, you know, in a place to get furthered, and we're,
sure.
And it kind of, you know, there are some things that will probably be addressed next issue as to you know, what happens from there.
Right.
And I would imagine that there's one part where there's an explosion and something happens to a SHIELD agent that happens along.
Mm-hmm.
That was brought up. I would imagine we will see something from that also.
Right. So. Right. Just one thing very quickly. The cliffhanger in this issue may or may not tie into the revelations that are getting set up in International Iron Man.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's one thing that I thought of. And two, Widow has a cool little device that's part of her Widow's Bite bracelet.
Oh, yeah.
That she uses in this, and it's something that I think we all wish we had at some point.
I know, right?
But anyway... I like this issue. It was a good read. I just, you know, it's not quite Click of the Week material for me.
Understood.
All right. How about, do you guys want to touch on the Star Wars stuff or you want to hold off?
Yeah, go for it.
Sure.
All right. Well, I read Darth Vader 23 knowing full well that I had kind of skimmed the last two issues. I'm sort of behind, but at the same time, this issue was very quick to jump into because there's plenty of action. There is the revelation of who the big bad is. I think it was revealed within the last two issues. I'm a little bit behind. And
as far as it's marked, yes.
Exactly. And we are now ramping up to the climax and the final confrontations that end this particular run of Darth Vader, this volume of Darth Vader, because we are, I believe, two official issues left.
That is correct.
So, listen, this was very easy to get into. There's plenty of action. There's plenty of great moments for Darth Vader. And we also leave off with something that I think a lot of people may have thought of, I hate to say this, at the end of episode 3 and kind of left in the back burner of their minds.
Right. And I kind of appreciated it because you didn't think, I was like, oh, that was something that has never been touched upon.
Exactly.
And so, I wonder if that's what made me think of RoboCop earlier and having
probably.
Yeah, probably. Probably. I mean, I had a good time reading this. Like I said, even though I'm a few issues behind, I didn't want to dig back and take a look at what I had missed. This is a nice issue to just, you know, kind of pick up and read and just have a good time reading it.
It also reminded me, well, I was going to say real quick, one of the things that you often forget about because of the movies and the limitations that they had when they did, the original trilogy. Then when they went back into the prequels, you still didn't get Darth Vader until, like, the very end. So this is basically him, if you want to say, like, in his prime era, and without the limitations right. of the, you know, late 70s, early 80s movie making. I forgot how badass he can be a lot of times, and how versatile he can be, and how he can, you know, go places without a second thought. He appears in one spot in this book that I didn't expect to see him.
Pretty much.
And my first thought was, no way, I guess that makes sense that he'd do that. So that's one of the things I think is fun about this book is the way it really explores the character.
Sure.
Yeah, and that part that you're talking about, that was a particularly interesting, if not short, fight that takes place in that area. I was like, sure, he'd be able to handle himself right there.
So yeah, that was I was pleasantly surprised by that book. I was also unpleasantly surprised by how quickly I stopped reading Star Wars number 21 this week.
Stopped reading?
Yeah, I started looking at it and I said, oh wait, I may have to actually go back and figure out if this is was this a one and done or is this continuing a story?
Yeah, this no. starts a new thing out of nowhere.
Okay, I prematurely stopped thinking I had to go back.
Right. So here it does start something new, but the character specifically the one that is talking. Is a character I think we have seen before. I'm pretty sure because they kind of allude to it at times. We've just seen them in another fashion, let's say.
Okay.
I'm glad you said that because in the back of my head, I was wondering, at one point the Stormtrooper does something unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me wonder if he was a character from another book Marvel did that has ended. And if this was his reappearance in the main Star Wars book.
No, I believe this character was from this particular book, just from earlier art.
All right, yeah. Then I'm thinking somebody else.
Yeah. You know.
Because I don't watch any of the Clone Wars or Rebels or any of that stuff, so I didn't know if
right. I was thinking about that. Right, I was thinking about that too. But up until he does that one thing, I was like, oh well. And even before then, it was like, well, wait a minute.
It's so hard to talk about without spoiling what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much.
But the interesting thing I thought about was the angle that this took because the person who is narrating, we can go ahead and say this.
Hold on, I'll ring the spoiler bell.
Well, it's not so much of
Well, no, I was going to say. Well, go on. I stopped to listen to what you had to say.
Okay, I was about to say, so the crux of the book is pretty much coming from the Imperial side,
right.
Because we have a Stormtrooper crew who are going after Rebels, where they were. I'm sure that will play a part coming up, and we saw them at the end of last issue. But the narrator is by the lead of the Stormtrooper, who I believe we've seen someplace else, like I said earlier. But it's kind of interesting to see a Star Wars story from this side of it.
Yeah, I was really impressed with how you really feel sympathetic for the Stormtrooper side. Like, you really begin to see how, like, the reason why he's a Stormtrooper is not because he wants to be a thug who takes over the universe. He wants to be a Stormtrooper because he believes in the Empire. He sees good in what they're doing. He sees opportunity in the way that they control the universe, which, you know, is something that you never think of. And he looks at the Rebels.
We never see that side in the movies.
And they're also not clones.
Right.
which on that point, Dirt brought up something that actually puts me in mind of something, because you said you didn't watch Clone Wars or something. There was something particular about the way these Stormtroopers operated that reminded me of the main Stormtroopers in the Clone Wars. I'll say about that, because people who have seen the Clone Wars will know what I'm talking about.
Here's the one problem I had with the book, though, is that I read the issue, and then I kind of sat there for a moment to think about what I just read. My cat sneezed, and I realized that it took longer for my cat to sneeze than it took for me to read the entire issue.
Yeah.
I mean, like, seriously, it's like, I'm going to start reading this. This is pretty, oh, it's over. Huh, okay.
Yeah. It does pretty, it flows pretty fast.
Yeah, I think what I ended up doing was, reading and flipping through the first few pages, thinking, oh, I think I need to stop and just go back to see what happened in the last issue. So, because it did seem to be moving along pretty quickly. I didn't want to get too deep into it before kind of maybe spoiling or not getting to something I didn't completely understand because I'd missed something. So
I can pretty safely say you didn't miss anything from the last issue, because they actually come in at the last page of the last issue, or last page or so of the last issue. So
gotcha. All right. So I guess you guys had a pretty good time, despite the fact that it went by very quickly.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was an interesting the position for the book to take. I should say, and not position. That's the wrong word I'm thinking of. But
perspective.
Like I said, perspective. Exactly, because we rarely ever see this side, and that much was actually pretty good, That's why I enjoyed it.
Gotcha. Alrighty. All right. That covers the Star Wars section of the Marvel U. How about we jump back to some of the regular Marvel U stuff? Did anyone read Deadpool and the Mercs for Money #1?
Yep, I did.
There was actually a hip hop cover for this that I was not able to get because it didn't come into the shop. You know, there was like not a snafu in the ordering, but it's on its way there now.
That would be this one?
Yes, sir. I believe so.
And do you know what the? Oh no, wait. That's,
no, that's not it.
That's not it. It's this one. There you go.
Yeah, there it is. I don't even know what artist that is. I don't know what album that is.
Yeah, I was gonna say I have no idea.
Doesn't ring any bells at all.
Yeah, and there's a story later on. We will touch on that particular topic.
Oh, you mean like the tremendously new school stuff that they're using?
Yes.
So just very quickly, in this issue, we have the continuation of Deadpool's concept of assembling these various C, D, E, and F level characters into a group of mercenaries and put them together to try to go on missions to do good things. And generally, these are misguided attempts to do good things. And these mercenaries are not necessarily doing things, for anybody's good. They're just in it to get paid. Ultimately, we are introduced to a version of a character that was in the Deadpool movie, and who in this issue is ultimately, I guess this is the cliffhanger / spoiler, is ultimately on his or her way to being transformed into that version of the character.
And amusingly enough, the way this character is presented here, which, I mean, let's just go ahead and say, it's Teenage Negasonic Warhead from the Deadpool movie.
I thought it was Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Whatever. Regardless, the funny thing is that her powers, as they're portrayed in this book, are very much like the powers of Ulysses in Civil War II.
Right.
Which I found to be a joke unto itself. A little, wink, wink, nudge, nudge at what's going on in the DC universe. In the Marvel universe with a character who can see visions of the future and has the ability to change them. Although it appears that her visions are much more localized and much more immediate. Yeah. But there was a lot of humor. Like, I really enjoyed the humor in this book. Colin Bunn has done, you know, a lot with Deadpool over the years, and pretty much come down to that's my favorite writer working on the Deadpool books. There's so much that goes on. There's so many jokes about how they used to be the Skittles Deadpool crew, where they all had suits that looked like his but were different colors, and then he complains that they don't even wear those anymore. You know, all this kind of fun stuff that's thrown in there. So I just enjoy the little jokes in there that they do a good job of breaking the fourth wall without breaking the fourth wall.
Right.
Like they talk about the things that you talk about as a reader discussing the book with your friends, but not in a way that they're talking to the reader. It just lets you know that they're in on the same jokes that you are. And I appreciate that, you know, he's not, you know, talking to the screen, so to speak, anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it deals with the humor in a different way, but still, you know, of the Deadpool books, this is the funny. And I enjoyed this a lot. I don't know if it's quite going to be Click of the Week. It might be. It's a potential candidate for how much I enjoyed it. But yeah, it's definitely taking all of those, like you said, B and C, and you might even say D level on a couple.
I think I went all the way to F.
but taking those characters, you know, just gives them plenty of latitude to make fun of them and have fun with them.
Sure.
And so it just makes the book a lot of fun. And also the artwork in this is beautiful. Part of it is also the coloring. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that's the Guru FX is doing the coloring on this book, but I mean, just page to page, the book just looks fantastic, and the story's a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool.
Oh, going back a second, did I mention that Star Wars was a cover of the week? Or not cover of the week, a candidate of cover of the week. And I'm not saying cover of the week is becoming a thing, but I'm just saying I like that cover. All
right. Listen, that'll be in the hopper for future consideration, right? Cover of the week.
Well, when we do the end of the year wrap-up, you got to keep
there
that.
There we go. Yeah. Oh, I got to write it down.
All right. I think... What else showed up on other lists?
Was Spider-Man number 6?
Okay, you're going to do something else?
I was going to do something else. I didn't read that one.
Oh, okay, well, very quickly, I'll touch on Spider-Man number 6 because I know that... Turt, did you read this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I know that Tim read it. I know that, and now I know that Dirt read it. So I can discuss this without spoiling too much for Roddy, who I know will read this. Ultimately, what we have in this issue is a side story where Iron Man is approaches Miles and you know, kind of sees whose side he's on. Approaches him at least. One of the ongoing subplots in the book is Miles's mom and grandmother, more so his grandmother, trying to figure out what's going on with Miles. And the character who we saw on the cliffhanger page in the last issue has a slightly more prominent role in this issue, and we find out what, if anything, she exercises in terms of private eye ethics. We'll put it that way.
I will say I've given this book a really hard time the last few issues because it just felt like you got a book of 22 pages of story and 18 is them having a conversation in the cafeteria or them having a conversation on the sidewalk or them having a conversation on the playground or them having a conversation on the rooftop. But I finally felt like in this issue, things started rolling.
Despite the fact that everything was a conversation.
Everything was a conversation, but they were conversations about things happening, not just... We still had a couple pages of, hey man, you told my secret, not cool, whatever. Girls, yeah. Gotta learn how to talk to them, you know, whatever. But a lot of the conversations were conversations about story points.
Right, and move the story along.
Right. And so I appreciated that. So this one, actually, I felt like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. And I liked the way they portrayed Stark coming to Miles and not as like, hey, this is what's going on and this is what you need to think and I need you on my team, but this is how I see what's going on. I want you to think about it. And if you're going to be on my side, you know, you got to be all in 100% or just stay out of it type of thing.
Right.
And I liked that it wasn't, you know, a very heavy-handed portrayal like Bendis has done with Iron Man in the past. So either he's playing it differently this time, or he's, you know, actually putting in some character growth. Amazing if Bendis would ever do that. But yeah, this is a contender for Click of the Week as well. I enjoyed this one quite a bit.
Nice.
Which is, you bring up an interesting point because Tony has actually been approaching people in ways different from than he used to. Because now that I think about it, I remember in Captain America, Sam Wilson, I believe it was, where he was talking to Sam. He approached that one kind of like, yeah, you know, this is this and this. By the way, I hear you guys need some money, you know, so there was still a little bit of old Tony's still there, but he has been taking seemingly taking different approaches to where he's, you know, trying to get people on his side. And I think with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. there was something similar too.
Yeah. I did notice that the artwork was different. That did kind of stand out to me that it's not was it Marquez who usually does this one?
Pacelli.
And I could tell.
Pacelli, this is an off issue. I mean, I guess this is like one of the break issues.
Yeah.
So, distracting or just.
No, I mean, it was after probably about the fourth or fifth time Miles' face was on the page that I kind of went, oh, wait a minute, this is different. But it didn't jump out immediately.
Gotcha.
So that was pretty good.
Yeah, the artist Nico Leon was doing, was alternating or maybe filling in on some of the Ms. Marvel stuff too, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, I believe. I'm trying to remember what else, but yeah.
So yeah, definitely a good book.
Okay. So then let me bring up a book that is sadly ended with this issue, Contest of Champions number 10.
Oh, man.
Which, you know, I dare say it lasted longer than I expected it to, but at the same time, I would have wanted this book to go longer, a lot longer, because it was just like plain, it was just fun, you know.
I always thought this was a mini series to begin with. I was surprised, like I expected it to go six issues. I was surprised it went longer.
Right. See, they never built it as that, but yeah, it kind of felt like it could have been that way. So, but here we have the end of the contest, and it itself doesn't end in a spectacular fashion. The book kind of. Oh, by the way, potential. Cover
of the week,
because I love that cover. It's an homage to the
that's
the
a callback.
Contest of Champions, which I love. So, but in this issue, and I think it's not necessarily double size, but it is a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I think it was $4.99 instead of $3.99.
It is, right. Yeah. And it was like 30 some odd pages, something like that. But regardless, so here we have at the beginning of the book, pretty much goes to the end of the book, because we have the British Punisher, who's called Outlaw, kind of recounting the story of how things went in the end. And as of the last issue, it was him and a bunch of other people who were left on Battle World fighting a group of group from the Civil War. Secret Wars Battle War component of the Avengers, which was like President Stark and a couple other people. And also there was another factor. Oh, the Thunderbolts came in from that self-same universe. So it was kind of ended up being a three-way battle with each other until the Maestro comes along and comes out on the battlefield and, you know, got tired of sitting on the sidelines, as it were. But the whole thing just ends up being a big blowout, not a relatively big blowout of a battle, but then a character comes back who you thought was dead and kind of changes the tide and gets things going to the end. And turns out, hey, the British Punisher ends up being the one saving the day in the end.
Hmm.
So, and it seemed like it may be setting up something to come along, because apparently in the back of the book, the letters page saying that character is actually will be seen again somewhere. And we also see not necessarily a character art, but we see him developing a little bit more, because, you know, being that he used to be a Punisher, and people keep asking him throughout the course of the book, like, why you don't kill anymore? And it was like, and he told why in this issue, which apparently all Punishers know each other, because there's one Punisher from a whole another universe just kind
like
of
all the reads
know each other. Yeah, it's like weird. Which actually that would probably be a book I would want to read.
That's if they did a book called The Punishers, like Web Warriors.
If they did something like that, that would be pretty cool. So
what's the Punisher from Spider-Ham's universe? Like barbecue ribs? Like what is he?
I don't know. We should try to get control on that one.
Pulled pork.
Oh no.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure what animal would be associated with the Punisher, but yeah, we'll have to get Latour on that one, I guess, to see.
Yeah,
see
right. Thanks. Goodness gracious.
So, but it was a different read. It was a little bit of a wild ride in the going through it a little bit, and it just kind of ended pretty decently, you know.
All right, cool. All right, so I think we're in rapid fire now.
Sure.
What do you guys have?
Because let me do Ultimates.
I'm pretty much out. Other than Ultimates, I think that's it for me.
Okay. So yeah, Ultimates. Here we see them going. Well, apparently the character on the cover is a character that has shown up before, and I don't remember in Mighty Avengers.
Completely unrecognizable to me.
Yeah, exactly. So, and they even said what, you know, where he shows up in the back, which I appreciate them doing that, by the way.
It's a new universe shout out.
Exactly. Well, not that person, but yes, that one. We'll get to that one right now because I love the fact that because when that character showed up, I was like, wait, why does this person look so familiar? And that name was familiar. And then I got to the back of the book, I was like, oh yeah, it's another new universe tie-in, and I loved it, even though it's a different named character but the same powers. I'm like, oh, they are just kind of slipping in, which Al Ewing's kind of been doing here and there, slipping in, you know, new universe people more than what was initially set up when they kind of brought in that whole section a while back in Avengers. So that was cool. But here we see them. Apparently the event that's going on is this person called the Infinaut keeps coming, and every time he comes, he threatens to break up the world, literally, when he comes. And Blue Marvel, I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm saying that. Thinking of Black Lightning for some reason. Blue Marvel has been trying to take care of it this whole time, but now he has the Ultimates, and they have been warned by Ulysses. Then, you know, they have a plan ahead of time, and we see Giant Man Rise come into play. He's helping out a little bit, and Ulysses is actually there. But you also see, during the course of a little bit of coming friction, you know, within the team on their positions on the way they go. Because obviously, Carol's there on the team, and Blue Marvel kind of has a position of, hey, you know,
how best to use, right? How best to use Ulysses' abilities and what the, you know, and the ramifications of using them the way they've been using them.
Mm-hmm. So this kind of starts kind of putting those little chinks in the armor together, and we kind of have seen in the last couple of issues little mentions of that, and this even kind of goes into it. Now, that person he's not necessarily narrating, but in the beginning of the book, we know that person. That person's from somewhere, and I'm not sure where. The Vogue character, whatever his name is. Yeah,
I think he's been referenced. I think he's
He's been in this book, but I feel like he's been he's somewhere else, and I never did look it up.
I'm not 100% sure on that. That's a good source of research. Mm. I think that the whole Infinaut thing. You know, this was, you know, I like that this was, in terms of, like, the overall story arc, this was a shining example of the utility of Ulysses' abilities. That something like this that would have been misunderstood but for the fact that they had a chance to prepare allowed them to, you know, kind of approach this other than fist flying and asking questions later. And, you know, it's meant to show that there is a valid other side to the argument of not, you know, the argument of using Ulysses' power for whatever purpose that they're trying to use it for.
Right. And you also, know,
so this is the positive case.
Exactly. And also showing that, hey, you know, this is what's kind of bringing them to the fold of Civil War and showing that, hey, they're on different sides and getting them to that point.
Right, within the team.
Exactly. But what I want to go back to is the other, actually, now that I think about it, the other New Universe mention that I didn't even think about because it's come up a couple of different times in the past couple of issues where Volk's team is called the Troubleshooters. And I didn't take that because when it first came up, you were thinking, okay, he just has a team called the Troubleshooters. But with the entrance of the Agent Jessup, who has the powers of, you know, of a certain New Universe character.
Come on, that universe is how many years old? I don't even think I really should be ringing the spoiler bell.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so for anybody who's of a certain vintage and remembers the book Psi-Force, which I love that book. That book's great. The agent who was apparently spying on the team the whole time in the quote-unquote shadows has a power set of one of the members of Psi-Force.
Mm-hmm.
So, and apparently if this seems like what it ends up being, the Troubleshooters may be a similar team to the Troubleshooters also from the new universe. Except for in that universe, I think they had, like, you know, powered suits or something. So it seemed like they meet the Troubleshooters in this case. So if we see Spitfire again, we shouldn't be surprised. But so I enjoyed the fact that they put those in there. You know, I would have loved to see some other people, which there have been here and there, some other people from that universe come through. But like, I would have just loved to see more of Psi-Force and DP7 to come through. It'd be great. But who knows what the future holds?
Well, there's always one person.
Indeed.
Right.
Wait, are you talking about somebody specific or are you just saying?
No, I'm just saying there's always one person
that...
Bring back Psi-Force.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, this is true. This is true. And I have been that person for a minute, so I am guilty. But as far as this book is concerned, it was okay. It was okay to read, you know. We see them getting their shot in at Civil War II, and apparently this is taking place after 3 because some of that stuff gets brought up. But other than that, that's what it is.
Alrighty.
All right.
Let me one real quick. Because actually, speaking of Civil War tie-ins, Patsy Walker, Hellcat, number 8, and this will be real quick, because apparently Patsy has now found out about She-Hulk. So this whole issue is pretty much, you know, her finding out, her going to see him thanks to America Chavez, and then going back and kind of dealing with that fact and reminiscing with her cold crew about it, and going from there. But outside of that, nothing real earth-shaking.
Okay. All right. I was just going to throw out real quickly Nova. I believe the solicitation, I don't remember if it was solicitations or if it was an announcement of leading up to San Diego, but we got the news that there's a new Nova series coming.
Right.
And so it looks like this Nova series, of course, is going to end, and we're looking at the seeds of that in this issue. Nova is out fighting in New York, and all the other heroes are gone, and Nova has no idea where everybody went to, but no one's responding to calls, no one's showing up to fight this big monster, and so in the middle of the battle, crashes into a bar, and there's a former superhero who is a character from Next Wave.
Yep.
I never read Next Wave. I'm not real familiar with it, but apparently that character was in there. He's very cynical. Hates being a superhero. He's basically given up on it. Because there's so many of them out there, so why even bother? And this leads Nova to this situation where he begins to realize that A, yes, he is a kid, and B, he misses his family. And he'd feel really bad if something were to happen to him and his mom, you know, lost her son and whatever, whatever. And so he's beginning to think that maybe it is time to hang it up and stop being a superhero, which I'm kind of sad for because this has been a fun series, but it also kind of makes sense with character arcs and story development and those types of things. So, just quickly, if you've been reading the series, this does feel like it's actually building to something that it may actually pay off with the actual character and getting something out of him. But we do have another Nova series in the pipes coming down. So if you like the idea of a Nova, it looks like one of the longtime Novas will be returning to take over.
Right. I think we kind of touched upon that last week when all those leaks came out. So
yeah. Another book real quick, Spider-Man and Deadpool 7. On the one hand, they did the thing that's kind of become a fun, creative thing to play with. They set this book in the late 60s, and it looks like it's from the 60s. It's got the old pages.
Yeah,
and the funky artwork, the page layouts are in that style. But unlike Deadpool and the Mercs for Money, this one is, like, the humor is way too forced. Like, it's trying too hard to be funny as opposed to being funny. And it uses a lot of bad puns to try to make jokes, which, like, unless they're really good, they just fall flat. Like, it's got to be something super creative in your pun. And in this book, they just, you know, it's funnier to make fun of this book than to try to laugh along with it. It just did not sit well. I mean, I give them credit for trying and the idea of doing it set in the 60s and riffing on some of the old, Peter Parker. He's when he finally thinks he has a big score and he's going to get money, they remind him that he borrowed the money from what will be in this paycheck already and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's somewhat appreciated. But overall, the book just kind of fell flat for me. I didn't really, whatever. Quickly on Squadron Supreme. Early on in the book, we found out that one of the characters was actually an evil version of the character. The heroic character that they thought was on their team was left for dead, and this evil version of the character took her place. Well, now we find out what's happened to the evil one since she was outed and disappeared, and we find out that the good one that we thought was dead is actually alive, and she's on her way back. And so the dynamic of this book is all about this Wonder Woman knockoff character. Mm-hmm. You can call her Warrior Woman or Power Princess, depending on if she's good or evil. I love the way this book plays with the multiverse, the different versions of the characters. We find out that one of the universes that one of the characters from the squadron came from, she's actually an Inhuman of that world, and the Inhumans are a little bit different on her world, but still tied into the was it the Kree that messed around with the genetics and created the Inhumans?
Yes.
Yeah. So it plays in with all of that. It's enjoyable. Again, not like click of the week type great or anything, but if you've been following the series, this is a pretty good payoff for stuff that we saw happen early on in the series coming back around and playing into the current storyline. And I think that's going to do it for my rapid reviews for Marvel.
All righty. Anything else? Any other indies or anything like that before we get to click of the week?
Got Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 5.
Nice.
Were they mighty?
Or Morphin?
they did not morph.
Aww.
They were mighty-ish in the beginning. But we start off with the Rangers in apparently Rome before, well, I'm not going to say that part, in the past, let's say. Well, because I'm saying that because this whole book is kind of set back in that era before the events of, I guess, the beginning of the book happened, or the beginning of a certain part of the series happened, I should say. So, the Rangers are fighting this the statue that was made by Rita, of course, but during the course of the value battle, the Red Ranger gets out, kind of takes charge, does something, but gets in trouble. One of the other Rangers saves him, but the Red Ranger gets the credit, because the Red Ranger always gets the credit when the battle is over with. So Rita sees this, kind of picks up on it, and kind of sows some seeds or something. So we find out from during saying all of this is that apparently Tommy was not the first one to get offered the green power coin, and it was offered to one of the other Rangers, you know, after Rita kidnaps him and kind of talks to him a little bit. And ultimately, he makes a decision about whether he does it and goes from there. And, you know, that was pretty much the lay of the story. And apparently at the end of it, there is someone also in the shadows that's watching Rita, who kind of foretells some future-ish events, but she doesn't know who it is. And she's basically saying, hey, you know, they're basically saying, hey, you might want to do something different. But that's that. It was a pretty decent read, though. I enjoyed reading it.
All righty.
Okay. Oh, and also, if you know about the part where Book and Skull meets Lieutenant Stone, you get the backstory on how that happened.
All right.
I've got one indie book that I can jump to. This is Six number 7.
Right.
Which, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so. It's called Six because there's this team of six soldiers that have worked together overseas, and they come back together in civilian life to help out the wife of a friend, or a wife of a teammate who died when they were on mission. And she's being attacked by a Mexican drug cartel, and so they step in. The first, you know, few issues are about getting the team back together, trying to convince them to come back, explaining what happened to them overseas, how the character died, how they feel responsible for it, and why they're going to come back together and help. What we get with issue 7 is the big battle with the cartel finally happens. So they've been at this farmhouse. They've been, you know, trying to figure out how they're going to try to fight off this giant group of gunmen that are coming. This issue is pretty much start to finish bullets, 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 bullets. And for a book that's nothing really more than just shooting and running and shooting, and running around, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this book. You know, a lot of times I will criticize a book because it feels like it's just action, like the Star Wars book. You know, it was an action, and there was not a lot of talking. There was a lot of, you know, pages of them just running and jumping and running, and hey, shoot that, and they shoot it, and they keep running. This, in the midst of everything, there is a lot of going on. A lot of them talking about strategy and trying to flank, and you move over here and go check on him, and I haven't heard back from that person, and run over there, and, you know, while bullets are flying everywhere, while everyone's getting shot. And it's all stuff that you can follow, which is another great thing about it. The artwork, the style of it is not the greatest. Like, it gets the job done, but it doesn't have the polish of, like, a DC or Marvel type book. But it's still well laid out, and the story is well told. This is from George Pelicanos, who wrote The Wire. He was producer of The Wire and writer of The Wire, so it has that same gritty action feel to it. It does a really good job of showing you how everybody's moving throughout the battle, and there are enough landmarks and enough, like, key locations where things are happening that you can follow which characters are where, and if they try to get from one point to another, like, you understand what they have to get through in order to get there. It's kind of hard to describe, you know, if you're not reading it, but it really works out well. This is actually a potential click of the week for me because I've enjoyed this so much. There's only one more issue that's going to deal with some of the fallout of this and what's going to happen with the characters. But I've really enjoyed this series. Again, this is one where I picked up the first issue for absolutely no reason other than the fact that we had copies sitting at the store. So I figured I was bored, I'd give it a shot. And I've really enjoyed this series throughout. Again, potential click of the week for just how good the story is, how well-rounded the characters are, how well-told the story is, and just how you can have a giant firefight with bullets whizzing and grenades blowing up and people running all over the place, and it can still make total sense, which is not something that everybody can do. So I give them all the credit in the world for pulling it off in this book. This was really good.
What?
I said it's really good. They pulled it off.
No!
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right, so we got clicks of the week.
Yep. I will lead off, and my click of the week this week is Astonishing Ant-Man number 10.
Hmm.
Well, we know that Tim said that his pick was going to be that one Spider-Man book.
That's right. That one
Spider-Man book that came out this week. So pretty sure he meant that one.
Pretty
sure. I think he did mean Spider-Man number 6. Pew.
Are you shooting at something?
I guess I will go with... your pick was pretty good, Age of 70, but I think I will go with Contest of Champions number 10.
Nice. Listen, you've been a champion of this book for a long time, so no pun intended.
Pun intended, sure.
You know what? I think I will, just to throw some love out there. I'm going to go with 6, number 7.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice, gentlemen.
This is one of those books that I do, once the final one comes out, I think I am going to sit down with all the issues and read back over the entire thing. Like, it is good enough. It's one of those where it was good enough, I want to go back and revisit it, you know, like watching a TV series again for the second time.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cool. All right, so before we move on to our cinematic and comic book news and San Diego Comic-Con news that's broken over the last day or two, we're going to do an ad for Skull Candy. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcasts free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today. Alrighty.
So these first couple, let me go ahead and take care of those ones, because actually this one and one that I should have put closer up is one that I'm kind of more familiar with. And that is, this past weekend was Star Wars Celebration in Europe. There was some news, a little bit of news that came out of it. Unfortunately, we did not get a Rogue One trailer, but we did get, however, a trailer for Star Wars Rebels Season 3. And in that trailer, we see a villain from the extended universe who was not canon up until now come back into canon. So if you haven't seen the trailer, you should go see it, but I will go ahead and say it. Grand Admiral Thrawn will now be a threat in the Star Wars universe. Also, apparently Wedge Antilles will show up in the show, and also Tom Baker is also going to come in to voice a character. And there's some other stuff that kind of came up with that, but those were pretty much the big points about that. Also, during the course of that show, there is also a team called ILM X Labs who's been doing some things for the last couple of years, which I'm just now hearing about it. And what they have are two projects. One project called Trials of Tatooine, which is out right now on Steam, and these are VR projects, which is the stuff they're mainly dealing with. But this will be in canon story stuff that will be done in VR and probably other places. That this team will be doing. Now, Trials of Tatooine is out on Steam right now, and if you have an HTC Vive, then you can go check it out. It's just a little bite-sized thing that they did. The other part of that is David Goyer is actually also working on another VR project with the team, and this will be solely dealing with Darth Vader. We don't know too much about it outside of that, and they really didn't show that much about it because they didn't have much, because it's a way out. Sounds like it's going to be out in like 2018, sounds like. But we have that bit of news coming out off of that.
Cool.
Now we go on with the rest of the stuff.
All right. So Supergirl Season 2 has found its actress for Maggie Sawyer. Who's it going to be? Floriana Lima of The Family and Allegiance. That's cool. Let's see here. I don't need that. That's part of the SDCC. Do we have like the San Diego stuff kind of grouped together, or?
Yes and no. Like there's some stuff down at the bottom, but it's not. No, it's not.
I gotcha. So just very quickly, X-Men Apocalypse offers exclusive Dazzler album cover at San Diego Comic-Con, an album cover. Let's see here.
This one was solely for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Reeves and Gary Whitta are going to adapt Mouse Guard by David Peterson for film. Live action film. Is it live action film?
They say it's going to be animated with a mix of, it sounds like it's going to be animated with a mix of CG and whatnot.
That sounds like a lot of fun, because live action would be kind of funny with mice.
Mm-hmm. And the name Gary Whitta, it may be familiar to someone. He was one, some people, because he was the one who wrote the Book of Eli. He did the first draft of the Rogue One movie also.
Nice. Okay. There is Captain Power reboot series in development, and they are heading to San Diego Comic-Con.
Because they're bringing back the 90s in full force, apparently.
Apparently. So some of this stuff is related to news that dropped today. I believe there was a Netflix panel today, yes. And they dropped a lot of news regarding the Marvel series that are going to be on Netflix. And they also dropped images that are all over social media right now. So make sure to take a look at some of the preview art and posters for some of the series that have been announced, like Luke Cage, specifically Iron Fist. I saw something scroll up across my feed.
And actually, I was about to say, because they have, as of this is down at the bottom, but they have also just dropped the trailer for Luke Cage.
Yes.
They have also dropped the teaser trailer for The Defenders, and I believe they also dropped one for Iron Fist. And there's supposed to be another one that they're going to do Saturday, which that's also down a little lower, but we don't know. We're not entirely sure what it is. So, and since they've already did these, it could be something brand new. Sure. At least they're touting it as. But it sounds like they may have dropped something for Punisher too, but they were making it like that was a brand new. According to what some people were saying online, they're making it like it's a brand new, but we already knew that series was coming.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. So He-Man is set to return in the first new Masters of the Universe episode in 30 years at San Diego. The episode is called The Curse of the Three Terrors. It features Skeletor and Beastman. And He-Man is presumably in there as well. But that's pretty cool. It's made its debut on Wednesday, technically yesterday, and was shown outdoors in the parking lot at the corner of 8th and G in downtown San Diego. Have you guys heard anything about the episode itself?
Okay. No, not the episode itself, but it was put together by a company called Super 7, and they've been doing some Masters of the Universe collectibles, figures, you know, the last couple of years, and Mattel announced that they are going with Super 7 to create their next collector's line for Masters of the Universe. And so right now, Mattel has a website called MattyCollector.com.
Right.
And they sell WWE and DC superheroes, Masters of the Universe, Hot Wheels, you know, whatever stuff on there. They're actually going to close down that website at the end of the year and stop with those different collector's lines. But they are going to push all the Masters of the Universe stuff over to Super 7, and Super 7 is going to be creating all of the Masters of the Universe stuff and fulfilling it through their warehouse and their, you know, inventory system and whatever. So they are going to be the de facto Masters of the Universe toy company now for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
And will we hear more about this on Fans of Power?
Yes, in fact. We talked about quite a bit, because one of the things that Super 7 is doing is they're bringing back the original 5.5-inch style figures from the original He-Man line. So if you remember the original He-Man figures with the, you know, they had the big barrel chest with the arms on the sides. And yeah, they're bringing back that style of figure. Nice. Four new figures that they debuted at San Diego that are from the cartoon that they put together. And then they're going to be doing some new line in that style. Plus, they also do 3 3/4 retro style figures. So if you've seen those in the stores the last couple of years, they've done Star Trek and Firefly and Buffy and Aliens and,
right,
you know, all of those and that classic, you know, Star Wars style 3 3/4-inch figure. They've been doing Masters of the Universe in those as well. And actually, one of the gifts I got for my birthday, this is from Super 7 as well. They did Masters of the Universe muscle figures. There's no actual slime in this, but it's in the shape of a slime can.
Okay.
But the Masters of the Universe muscle figures, this is also from Super 7. So yeah,
I was about to say you could have put that slime in your Snake Mountain, but apparently there is none.
Oh, I've got a slime pit actually. Yeah.
Okay. But tell the audience where they can find the Fans of Power podcast.
Yeah, Fans of Power podcast recorded every Monday night. Usually goes up late Monday, early Tuesday, but that is at fansofpower.com, which is part of the Pop Culture Network.
Nice. All righty. Let's see. Moving on, we have some sadder news that's related to some stuff that we had reported a few weeks back. J.J. Abrams says Star Trek IV, the next volume of the newest reboot of the Star Trek franchise, will not replace the recently deceased actor Anton Yelchin as Chekhov.
I missed one. Gotham cast Walking Dead baddie as Mad Hatter.
Ah, but, yeah. Yes, one of the wolves, I believe.
That is. Yes, that is correct.
Yep, one of the wolves. Let's see. Okay. Do you want to start with some of this stuff, or if you're familiar with this, Roddy?
Which one? The Supergirl stuff, or after that? Oh yeah. So
Supergirl. I was about to say.
Well, no, don't worry about that. Yeah.
Hey, anytime you want to talk about Powerpuff Girls.
Exactly.
Well, okay, fine. Though Powerpuff Girls got renewed for a second season. There you go.
Nice.
Let's see. Supergirl's season 2 casts CW veteran Chris Wood. I am not familiar with this person as a surprise character. We don't necessarily know who this person will be, but he will show up in the second season of Supergirl. Let's see. Well, I'll skip that for a second. Arrow season 5 villain ties back to one of Oliver's season 1 kills, which I found this kind of interesting because I'm like, well, not interesting, but weird because like they've already done something like that because that's how the character of Cupid came in. Or it wasn't season 1, but it was the one of their seasons. So basically they're saying like, hey, this person will have ties to somebody who killed or something. And I think Stephen Amell kind of came back. It came out and said, hey, yeah, they're trying to go back to the roots of what Arrow is in with this, so we shall see how that turns out. I don't think we know too much else about what this character is outside of what's already been announced. Let's see. I have already spoken about this, but there's supposedly Saturday there's going to be a brand new Marvel show trailer coming. Again, we don't necessarily know what it is, but it's speculation is, speculation is some of the stuff we've already talked about.
Right. But and what's cool is that there's lots of, there's lots of options to speculate about, and that's a good sign.
I mean, one of the speculations, it could have been something like that Captain America special that they had like last year also, which I didn't get a chance to see, but again, we don't know and we shall see, but it sounds like it's for another show.
Right. All right. Let's see here. So there is a live action Pokemon movie called Detective Pikachu in development at Legendary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kind of talked about it last week because it was rumored that was going to happen, and apparently it's now official that it's going to happen, and that is what it's going to be.
Right. And it was just announced that the new creative team and teaser art from a new DuckTales comic series has been revealed.
Yeah, so apparently this series was announced back in December, which I don't remember if that was the case, but now they have some art that they revealed or will reveal at the show, and the show itself, there's also going to be a comic which pretty much goes through the first 5 episodes, sounds like, of the original DuckTales show, and that comic will be available, actually it's available now at the convention, and will go on sale in the store on September 27th. The series itself will be in 2017 sometime.
Cool. Voltron, Legendary Defender gets a second season on Netflix. Well, woo-hoo! I was kind of hoping they would because they did end the first season on a cliffhanger.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but they ended the last series on a cliffhanger as well, and that didn't help that show. So
I don't even remember that. That's
the Voltron Force. Yeah. One of the team members who wanted to pilot the Black Lion and be the leader of the team, turns out that they said he wasn't good enough. And so he turns against the team and becomes evil.
Is that how the first series ended?
Yeah, the end of was it the second season? Did it go 2 seasons and it ended? In that final episode, he leads the villains on an attack on Voltron.
Oh, wow.
And it ended, and that was it.
Wait, is that the same one who quote-unquote died, or is that like, I don't remember, because I'm thinking of like 2 or 3 different versions of Voltron at this point.
Are you thinking of Sven, when Sven came back to life?
Yeah.
Sven!
No, it wasn't
such a great character.
Okay.
That's funny. We're not talking about that iteration, I don't believe.
Yeah, no, don't like it, so. Okay.
So some of the upcoming stuff now is related to some stuff that was announced today.
Yeah, we just already talked about it, like the teasers for the Defenders and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and have been released.
Cool.
Yeah, and that was one little tidbit I kind of took out of apparently from the Luke Cage panel that Rosario Dawson, who plays Claire Temple throughout the whole Netflix series of stuff, was not at the show. And granted, this could be nothing, but apparently she could not make the show because she's shooting something else for Marvel and Netflix that they'll announce later, which could be the thing that we're talking about for Saturday, if it is something. Or it could be Punisher. We don't know.
Right, we don't. Just very quickly in the solicits, there is one important piece of information that was contained in the Marvel solicits for October of 2016, and what's revealed there is that the X-Men series do live on.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's it. Well, I got some stuff in clickbait, but that stuff,
yeah.
That was nothing newsworthy, really.
All right, so we have comic news. So help me out here. Was this stuff announced at the very start of New York Comic Con, as in Wednesday?
Some of this stuff was announced like early as last week, like after the show, like particularly the first couple of things. So a lot of the stuff is like well before the show started.
Gotcha. All righty. Matt Kent and David Rubin blend science and magic together in an upcoming series entitled Ether for Dark Horse Comics. Mm-hmm. In All New, All Different Avengers Annual Number 1, the story is going to be illustration of a fan fiction created by Ms. Marvel.
I believe it's going to be a series of them. So they've got a few different writers doing stories that are going to depict the fanfic that Kamala would write.
Gotcha. So Frank Cho is leaving or has left Wonder Woman and blames Greg Rucka's political agenda. The dude was just doing covers and now he's just like, yo, peace, I'm out.
Yeah.
I guess Rucka decided that he was showing too much skin on one of the covers and wanted it cropped down. And Cho was like, I'm following the style guide. Like, this is exactly how the outfit is supposed to be drawn. This is how it's supposed to work. And all it is he's showing some thigh.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Rucka just thought it was too much and wanted it cropped and whatever. And so Cho was just like, fine, forget it, I'm out.
Yeah, but at the same time, it did sound like Cho was kind of being a whitey baby, because I think he did like post a picture. Sounds like he posted two different pictures. Well, he posted a picture, but it was cropped not to show the part that for some odd reason that there was an issue with. And it wasn't. And I saw another picture of it. Didn't seem that much, but it was showing like a panty line or something like that. But still, right. Not without controversy.
Well, the thing was though, and this is like to be 100% honest, we have a couple customers that they're only buying Wonder Woman with the Cho covers.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that they wanted. He's leaving the book. They're not going to buy it anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, there's something there.
All right.
I say, here is Wonder Man. It's different.
Yes.
All righty.
In a way, aren't we all Wonder Man?
Boy, preaching. Anyway.
Alrighty. Stanley.
So going back to, there was some, actually, I forgot this earlier, but apparently the first Rogue One action figure was also revealed at Star Wars Celebration. Okay. It is the lead character, Jyn Offer. Urso. So, and that panel was actually pretty good because Gwendolyn Christie was the one moderating it, and they had the whole cast out there, and that happened. It was pretty funny. You can skip over these next two because
I jumped over all of the Star Wars stuff, but then I realized that there actually was some cool stuff in the action figure news.
Yeah, because there was supposed to be a Star Wars Marvel panel, but apparently they just live blocked, and doesn't seem like there was really any news for it. The only news is there are some books that are coming out of that are coming out. One including, actually, I forgot to mention earlier, a book from Timothy Zahn, who did the original Thrawn trilogy. He's writing another book that's going to come out next year, called Thrawn. So that's okay. Something. And then there's a few other books that are coming out. I think Ahsoka's getting a book, and I think there's supposed to be some comics here and there, but nothing really concrete about that stuff.
Alrighty. Stan Lee is going to launch William Shatner's Singularity comic book universe at San Diego Comic-Con. This is a panel that is scheduled tomorrow, and the Shatner Singularity Universe panel is going to introduce the new imprints, digital comics, and cinematic graphic novels, including stuff that is worked on by Stan Lee, it looks like. Or at least as far as he's doing stuff that he can't read or see.
Yeah, and Fabian Nicieza also working on some stuff, and a whole bunch of other, it sounds like some other people, but we'll find out more about that later.
Right. Let's see here. This fall, Dark Horse Comics offers... I just scrolled far too far. Curse Words is a new darkly comedic fantasy comic from writer Charles Soule. Shout out to Charles Soule. And artist Ryan Brown, due early next year from Image Comics. The title details the adventures of a wizard named Wizord, who turns up in modern-day New York and starts using his magical powers to help people. The twist is actually that he's an evil wizard in good wizard disguise. So that sounds like a nice, interesting premise, because it throws together a whole bunch of tropes. And it's nice to see some stuff that Tim might actually dig, even though it's a mixture of magic and present day stuff.
Right, and apparently Ryan Brown, Ryan Brown is the one who's doing the art, who had his own God Hates Astronauts, I believe was his book, who apparently put Charles Soule into his book, and the fans of that book were kind of asking for things, and apparently that's how this book got started, because people were kind of hounding Charles Soule about doing some stuff with Ryan Brown or something about that, or something about his character in the book or something like that, because they kept asking for prints being done of the character in positions, and then that kind of led to this
in positions.
Yes,
in positions. Oh my goodness,
it's not as bad as the sound, but it was like the way he made it sound was like he wasn't too comfortable with it at first, but he kind of wanted to do it. So.
Alrighty. Interesting. So Dark Horse is going to offer some Star Trek fans some comic books based, adult coloring books based on Gene Roddenberry's famous creation. Mm-hmm. This is going to be what? Next Generation and Original Series? Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
Cool.
And let us clarify. Adult coloring books just means they're intricate, not that these are naked Star Trek.
However, if you do want those, they're out there. You can go look for them yourself. Hey.
Alrighty. Image Comics plans a new, quote, All-America Hero for 2017 series. This is an interesting story because, and you're about to get to it, the twist is who the creators are and the name of this creation and how it relates to another creation, mm-hmm. theirs.
So Joe Casey and Nick Dragota, who created Marco Chavez, is creating this character also, and they're going to have a book for this character since apparently Marco Chavez doesn't have one of her own.
Right.
And
the character's name is America Vasquez for the least amount of brand confusion that you can have.
Mm-hmm. So, which actually also the only thing that brings to mind is whatever happened to that Labyrinthica book. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce that right. Because there was a book that came out that was talked about in the New York Post. You remember, we talked about it on Twitter.
That was
also a similar character, kind of a Superman
That was a promotion related to, if I'm not mistaken, the Puerto Rican Day Parade. Right. And
but there was a book.
Right, and that I think was very specific to some effort to make to actually create a Puerto Rican character, even though White Tiger was one. But let's not belabor the point.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting that these two creators who had such a hand in creating. Yeah, America Chavez doesn't have much of a presence in the Marvel U right now, other than being in Ultimates. But at the end of the day, if someone comes up with a good pitch, listen, they're putting out a Fool Killer series, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that they'll put together an America Chavez series.
What are you saying about Fool Killer?
They just need the proper pitch and the proper exposure for the character.
Sure, but anyway, but this All American Comics will launch sometime in 2017.
Right. Now we're getting to the announcement that Roddy and I were referring to way earlier in the show. So Marvel is launching a new wave of hip hop variant covers. So following the release of the 50 hip hop cover variants, Marvel and Fuse announced on Fuse recently announced that there is a second wave of hip hop covers. The first three of many more hip hop variants, and my wallet is kind of groaning, but at the same time, I may be more picky this time around, given what albums are being given the honor of an homage. Bill Sienkiewicz's Black Panther #7 variant is styled after King Mez's Long Live the King. Where is my sound effect? Marco D'Alfonso's Mosaic #1 hip-hop variant is inspired by Earl Sweatshirt's debut mixtape Earl, and Designers?
Designers, kinda, yeah.
Led to Theotis Jones's Doctor Strange #1 variant.
So, despite the only one of these that I know about is the Earl Sweatshirt one, the only thing I can say about that is...
What?
I gotcha. So, ultimately, while obviously putting out the names of these creators and artists is already giving them a far greater exposure to the mainstream audience than what they're currently enjoying. Maybe I just need to turn on Spotify or Pandora or something to listen to some of these cats and their music. But ultimately, this is a huge boon to their exposure and some nice easy marketing for them.
Now, the one good thing that came out of this, actually, or it seems like it's coming out of this, is there is going to be a book that will showcase the previous release first wave of covers, mm-hmm. and that's coming out in October 12, which I thought they had already done something like that.
They did a select number of covers from the first run, and they put out a free book, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like a free flip book that collected a certain number of the covers.
Right. Well, this one's going to be a hardcover, and it's going to feature a forward from Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Nice.
So, and I'm hoping they kind of put some other stuff in there, like the inspiration of it, and like all the kinds of. I kind of like seeing stuff like that, and maybe throw some little extra things into it if it's not just the cover. Then hey,
not just an art book. I gotcha.
Yeah,
I gotcha. Alrighty. Dynamite announces a new Betty Boop series from Roger Langridge and Giselle Lagasse.
Yeah, I don't know. We apologize for butchering her name.
Yes, we apologize. And that book is set to make its debut in October 2017.
Boop, boop, be doop.
Oh! Roger Langridge, whatever his name is, I think that's the same guy who did the Muppets books at Boom when they first jumped on the scene, started doing kid-related titles. So those Muppet books got a fair amount of press and actually sold pretty well. I'm figuring that even though I don't know if there's much of a market for Betty Boop, he's at least a creator that has a little cachet. In certain collector circles, so that'll probably help that book.
Nice.
Sounds like he did also Popeye.
Oh, yeah, the new ones.
Yeah,
they did original stories for a while in one series. They're still doing the reprints of the old series, but yeah, for a while they did some new ones that he was a part of.
Oh, wait, and the artist did a web comic called Menage 3, which I think I've seen before, but I don't remember too much about it.
Yeah, you did.
Anyway.
So, Jonathan Hickman launches Frontier at Image. The book is like Star Trek, but super depressing. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
New Star Trek Boldly Go comic series picks up the pieces of Beyond, so the movie, which is coming out this weekend, I believe.
It is out to tomorrow.
Yes.
Or it's technically already out. But
yes. Right. This is opening weekend, and this Boldly Go comic series is going to pick up right where Beyond leaves off. So mm-hmm. that's pretty cool. That will be out in the fall.
Right, and the current creative team is going to end with the 60, and then they're going to, I guess, go into this new one.
All righty. I don't know if you want to skip that.
I'm going to talk about it real quick. Talk about the Batman trailer.
Yeah.
I think we may have mentioned this before. So there is going to be a Batman the Telltale series game coming out at some point soon, actually. And it is going to be, so the Telltale series are pretty much the same thing as the Walking Dead games, where, you know, you have a story and it's episodic and you have choices and it gets to a certain point. Telltale has been doing a series of these for various properties, and now Batman is going to get one. And apparently this one, like I said, it's going to be out soon, and there's going to be a good bit of time spent as Bruce Wayne part, because I guess it's going to enter a little bit of his psyche.
Okay. Let's see here. Do you want to talk about this Rat Queens?
Yeah, we're going to just real quick. So Curtis Weeby apparently is going to continue Rat Queens as a webcomic. Some people know, that book has been mired in controversy throughout its run, and he recently said, well, he's decided not to do the book for a little while and try to figure out what he's going to do with it. So now he's apparently coming back with a webcomic with Mike Norton and Cecilia Dupe. Like, if you want to read about if you don't know about all the controversies that book has had, then you know, there are places you can read that.
Right.
So
we won't get into that now. Right.
Yeah, it's a bunch of mess.
Right.
So, which is sad, because that book was really good, you know, like art and story wise. So I kind of sad.
Sure. I'll just touch on the next bit of news very quickly. The first real looks at the Captain America real life 13-foot bronze statue came out today, or yesterday, from preview night at San Diego Comic Con. And it's a pretty cool statue. I'm not so happy about some of the influences that they used to, you know, what they pulled from. It's not exactly a single inspiration. It's kind of a mishmash of various elements from various versions of Captain America, and that part I'm not happy about. But I'm still overall happy that there's a Captain America statue that's going to be making the rounds. It's going to be on display at Prospect Park, and then it's going to go to... well, starting at Comic-Con, then going to Prospect Park, and then after that, it's going to be in front of the Barclays Center, home of the Brooklyn Nets, before making its way to Sunset Park in Brooklyn in October, strangely enough, where there's going to be a Bed Bath & Beyond opening. Kind of weird.
I was wondering where that part came from, because I saw that in another article. Yeah.
So I saw that in another article, and I remember that as I was reading this news article, and just kind of weird. So I'll just leave that. I'll leave off this the story with this sound effect. And move on.
But we will say, look out for Agent 70's Instagram, where he'll be posted up by the Captain America statue in various forms of well, hopefully fully dressed, but
no, fully dressed. Of,
yes. Chilling around it.
Yeah, there will be selfies taken, maybe. Next, we have...
You can skip that unboxing one.
Okay. Very quickly, someone gave Mark Hamill a custom Joker lightsaber, which combines his two really iconic roles into one kind of cool prop.
Mm-hmm. So this happened at Star Wars Celebration, and apparently this is what I found out I did not realize, because during the course of his panel, he had a panel where he was just him talking, going, you know, doing his thing, but this was like well after the fact. Apparently he has a show that he does called Pop Culture Crush or something that I did not know about that I may have to check out. And he was, during the course of this video, which he was kind of tired of, and when he was presented with it, he was like, oh, you know, y'all should stop doing this for me. Thank you. Anyway, but he didn't realize it was for him. And then he was like, he was actually chest. We were just looking real tired and stuff. And I think it may be, end up, it may show up on a show at some point. We don't know.
All right. Let's see here. Steve Orlando and Jacob Rebelka go epic for a new comic called Namesake over at Kaboom Comics this October. Let's see here. So you guys, I saw you guys talking about this real quickly. We're running a little long tonight. Yeah. Very quickly, what is this Marvel Insider, and what are some of the pros and cons that you guys have discovered so far?
So apparently it's a rewards program. Like, if anyone's familiar with the gaming ones, like the Xbox has their own, and Best Buy have their reward points thing, and like every hotel and chain and whatnot has a rewards program that you basically do stuff. Like, say, if you have digital comics, you enter them, you put them in, and you get points for doing that. You watch this video from Marvel, you know, you get points for that. You go to the wiki page, you get points for that. So, and the accumulation points, you get whatever rewards they have set aside for it.
You mean more Pokeballs?
Nintendo does has its own reward program that is similar to that, but no Pokeballs. No, sorry.
Okay.
Like, you could get stuff, like, say, for X amount of points, Bendis will, you know, mention you in a tweet, or Dave Marquez will mention you in a tweet, or a year of Marvel Unlimited.
Okay.
Which brings apart an issue that both Dirt and I had, and with, if you're already a part of Marvel Unlimited, like both of us are, you can't take advantage of the points you get from signing up for it, because it doesn't...
That's like a new cable deal. You know, that's like a new subscription to a cable service. You know, right. that super low rate is only for the new subscribers. You don't get to resubscribe at a lower rate.
Mm-hmm.
So that made perfect sense.
Well, you know... if you call the cable company and say you don't care anymore and you want to cancel, but you can get those rates because sometimes they'll even expand your package, give you a better box, and you pay less than what you paid before. It's been known to happen to my account from time to time.
And people in the account, actually.
So, same here.
That's all that is. You know, it's free, so there's you don't really. If you're doing some of the stuff that I mentioned, then whatever else they say, then hey, it's something.
And there's a lot of stuff on there that's just like, hey, you can unlock a Captain Marvel wallpaper, or a Captain America phone HD screen saver thing. I mean, it's just. Right. A lot of it's garbage.
Copy. Exactly. Or you can get a digital copy of a book that you probably already have anyway.
Yeah, you can get like Avengers number 1 from 2014, which you probably got free at Comic-Con last year, or you got free in a bundle that you know.
Anyway. Even on Comicology at this point, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
So, like, the best thing on there is probably the year of Marvel Unlimited, but it's a lot of points, and I'm like, even.
Okay. Yeah, some of them are like 12 million points. It's like, oh, how many do I have? 200.
How many RoboClicks do you need to set up for that, right? All right, so just wrapping up very quickly, Brian Lee O'Malley announces Worst World, a new trilogy of graphic novels put out by Balancing Books. Vixen is the newest character to join DC Bombshells line of statues and the comic. Mm-hmm. And at Comic-Con, DC unveiled Wonder Woman's Invisible Jet to close preview night.
Okay, so let me say something about this really, really quick.
The jet?
So, yeah. Okay. So they did that whole thing, and it's on Periscope still, and so I'm pretty sure it may be on the side somewhere. So you see the big unveil, and I was thinking, okay, this could be cool. And then they unveiled it, and for those of a certain vintage, if you know those little wooden planes that they used to sell that you used to have to socket the
yeah, of course. Together
and fly, that's what it kind of looked like
wing,
to me.
Right, you put the wing, it was like a two-piece balsa wood thing, and you put the wing into like a slot in the middle of the plane's body, yeah.
Right, and it was pretty much a cutout of part of it. So, because apparently you could, during the course of the video, you could see like, you know, that part of the wing, because you only needed one section of it anyway. But apparently you can go into the back of it and I guess climb into it and take a picture or so, or at least they did that with somebody. I don't know if they're actually letting people do that, but that happened. But if that was like, that looks kind of really cheap looking.
Yeah, kind of. I didn't want to say that. But so, yeah, that's a fair critique. Absolutely fair.
But at the same time, maybe it'll look better when they show it on screen. Who knows? Who knows?
Gotcha. All righty. Well, before we wrap, I'm going to do something I forgot to do last week on our show when Tim was away getting hitched. Do our second ad read of the night. This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8 Like Thumbs Up and Droid Evolution, inspired by Star Wars The Force Awakens, and Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcasts free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it, not tomorrow, not yesterday, but today. Take us home.
All right. Since Tim's not here, I guess somebody's got to do it. So since Tim would say he wants to thank all our guests, I guess I have to say it too. So we want to thank Agent_70 for being here tonight. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Thank you for the sound effects.
Yay!
And also, don't forget, at Roddy Cat. You can also find him online at News Nerds Need. And he can also throw up some awesome screenshots. Well, what the heck is that? That is bizarre.
Dropping an elbow. Oh, that's Ben.
Yeah, that's Uncle Ben from Spider-Gwen. Yes. Yeah.
The Spider-Gwen annual.
He dropped the elbow on a bad guy.
That's funny.
All right.
That's good.
Don't forget to check out theclicknation.com. Also, with I know a lot of you guys are listening to the podcast. For some reason, the audio feed gets like, I don't know, 900 times the amount of hits that the video feed does. And I don't understand why, because we are all so beautiful here. So watch us. You can go to theclicknation.com/live, or you can also check out the Click Nation YouTube page, check out the video feed. You can see the awesome covers that we keep talking about. And again, you can look at us, so what more would you want? But also, don't forget to check out cspn.us, where you can find other great podcasts. We're also part of the comic-related podcast group, so you can find us there. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, so make sure you look up Click, and it's Click with K-L-I-Q, just like the awesome wrestling group from back in the day. So, again, everybody, I am at PCN_Dirt. That's Dirt from Pop Culture Network. Make sure you check out my site at popculturenetwork.com. And find me on Vine, because I do six-second comic reviews. I have decided I'm not going to do the expanded time code thing crazy. I'm keeping it 6 seconds because I'm hardcore and old school, and that's how it's done. So,
nice.
Thanks for watching, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Hey!
Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your ear?